Okay, today's daf in the Sechet Nazir, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Dalet. So let's start right at the bottom of Nun Gimel Amud Beis, and remember that we had interrupted our wonderful discussion about the dinim of Tumat HaTahom, this brand new halacha, halacha l'mashbi Sinai, and we started talking about another very fascinating anomaly in the dinim of Tumah, which was called Tum'at Safa. So once again, remember that we have, in general, a very strange issue by Tumah, which is that the Torah also, as a halacha, was mechadesh based on the dinim of Seita, that there's a difference between where a Safek Tumah occurs. If it occurs in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, then the din is that it's tahor. We don't have to worry about it. If it occurs in Rosh Hashanah Yochid, then the din is that it's tameh, and there's no further thinking about it. The question is that the definition of Rosh Hashanah Yochid, Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, is very different when it comes to the dinim of Tumah and when it comes to the dinim of Shabbat. The one we're talking about, Tumah, Rosh Hashanah Yochid and Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, is in terms of the consciousness that is occupying it. And because of that, it's three is a crowd, like it is by Sotah. It's not considered that a woman was alone with a man if there's three people. And the same thing is true in terms of the definition of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, Rosh Hashanah Yochid. When it comes to Shabbat, the issue has nothing to do with the inhabitants. It has to do only with the Mechitzot, although you will recall that the Chachomim extended the din of Rosh Hashanah Yochid and Rosh Hashanah Rabbim in the dinim of Shabbat to also be a function of the people. Remember, it's because of that that we need the Eruvei Chatzeros, and if there's different diurim, and what type of mechitza is called a mechitza, if it's constructed not for purposes of inhabitants, and so on. So there is an overlap. Now, the Mishnah, how did we get started on the question of this idea of floating tumah? Well, the Mishnah spoke about a case that started with the pure discussion about Safek Tumat HaTahom, and it says that if there was a mace that was floating on top of the water, so then if the question was that he might have been in the underneath the Ma'ara at the same time that this person went down to be Tevel, that's not called a Tahom. But note that we talked about specifically where there was a problem of ohel. What if there was a problem, not that they were under possibly the same roof at the same time, but rather the simple question is, he might have touched the maid, might not have touched the maid, but at no point were we concerned that maybe the maid was under the same ohel that he was. How about then? So since the Mishnah talked about specifically that he went into the Ma'ara, we understand that the problem was the mate inside the Ma'ara and not in the area of the water that could be seen from outside the Ma'ara. A very common kind of thing where you're going to be Tevel, you know, like in, what's that place? Ayin. Oh, I forgot what it's called.
Batayin.
So like in Batayin, I just forgot. I'm telling you, it's becoming here. Yeah, I can't even remember what the word is for not being able to remember words. So, you see? Aphasic. Anyway, so you have over there, it's possible to be Tevel, but not to be inside the Ma'ara, or to be inside the Ma'ara. So this guy went into the Ma'ara to be Tevel. Why does the Mishnah say that's the case? If anyway, the mace is Sofal Pnei HaMayim, because the question of whether he touched the mate is surprisingly not an issue. Why is that? So yesterday we brought that the din of Tumah Safa is a special halacha, and it's not metame. Now, where we learn the halacha out from, as we'll see, is by sheretz. And of course, sheretz is not metame but ohel, and that means that the din of Tumah Safa is a din that has to do with maga, but not by ohel. So therefore, the Mishnah gave us a case where we had a Tumas HaTahom, and we were talking about, is that called Tumat HaTahom? Binogea Tumat Ohel, Bedafka. Because it didn't want to mention the problem of Negia, because that would have been Tumat Safa, which would have been Tahor for another reason, not because of the fact that it's Tumat Hatahon, but because of the fact that it was Tumat Safa. So let's start again from Samach Gimel Amud Beis so that we can look at that halacha now in its full glory. Ketzad, Yarad, Lamara, etc., etc. So now, you see from here, the din is that Safa Eina Mitama, we know that that's true when it comes to Tumat Shratzim. Because the Tanan, we have a Mishnah that says, and we've spoken about, remember, the gears here, as I mentioned yesterday, in the Rosh is the Tanan, but we've spoken about whether you could use the word Titania across the board. So the Tanan. So here we have a Mishnah in Tyrus that says, if you have a suffix that is Nogea, floating Tuma, it doesn't matter where the floating was, whether the floating was on top of a body of water or whether the floating was on top of a bucket. You have a bucket in the kitchen. And it was a suffix that you were nogea in a dead sheretz that was floating on top of the water in the bucket. The din is that it's tahar. Rabbi Shimon says no. If it's in a bucket, so that is not considered to be floating. If it's in water that's on the ground, that's where we have the din of the Tumat Safa not being metame. That's where we got up to yesterday. So today the blot begins with my time at the Tanakama. So why does the Tanakama, where does this whole din of Tumat Safa come from? Omer of Yitzchak Bar Avodimi, K'tiv B'chol HaSheretz HaShoretz. Now, if you read the Pasuk, It's a very strange pasuk. It's the Al Teshaktsu et Nafshotechem, Bechol Hasheretz Hashoretz, Velo Titamu Bahem, V'nitmeitem Bam. Now, yeah, this is not really Tuma, but it's referring to Achila when it says Tuma. But the point is that the Torah uses a Loshon of Tuma, and it says, Bechol Hasheretz Hashoretz. We don't care where the moving around is. It's the type of thing that crawls about, wherever it crawls. I don't care. But on the other hand, we have the posik that says that v'zelechem atamei b'sheretz ha-shoretz al ha-aretz. Well, wait a minute. Didn't you just say b'chol ha-sheretz ha-shoretz? And then in the other posik you put in al ha-aretz? Well, which one is it? Does it have to be crawling around on the ground? Or can it just be crawling around anywhere? So therefore, the answer to the contradiction is, okay, Tzad, if you're talking about definitely coming into contact with the sheretz, so then it's for sure metame wherever it is. But if there's a suffix, whether there was a negei of a sheretz, suffix magaho, if it's in the water, then it would be tahar, because it has to be alaharetz. And if it's in a bucket, it's not alaharetz. That's the svara of the Tanakhama. What's the svar of Rabbi Shimon, who says that a bucket doesn't count as water? Omar Ula, well, Ula points out, the pasuk is a little bit funny because it seems to be talking about, at the beginning of the sugya, something that is irrelevant. It says, Ach mayan ubor mikvemayin yetohor. And then goes right on to say, V'nogea b'nivlatam yitma. Whoa, wait a minute. Doesn't that mean, there's no connection between touching a nevela and being in a body of water. A mayan ubar mikvah, what does it have to do with nogea b'nivla tam yitma? So therefore, it implies that if you would be inside, in other words, the negia would take place in a mayan or bar mikvah mayim, then you would be tahor. But if you're touching it outside of the bar mikvah mayim, then you would be tameh, in the case of a suffix. So that says that you become tamein, which means that if it would be a bucket and not a bar mikvah mayim, so then the din is that it would be tamein. And that's Rabbi Shimon Svara. If it's tsofa bekelim, then it's tamein. And that's why it says yitma. If it's tsofa in the karka, which is the bar mikvah mayim, then it would be tahar. So, according to Rabbi Shimon, we introduce also the dinim of nevela that are related to where it was that the nevela was to the dinim of sheretz that talk about where the sheretz was. And so, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's all one circuit. Tana Rabbanan, when it comes to defining this new halacha
of Tumat Safa, you need to know that if the Tumah was being dragged or was being carried, so a person, now this is so similar to Shabbos that it's eerie, right? Because we have over there the question of what the halacha is, if something is within Shlosha Tvachim of the ground, is it considered to be munach in that rishos, even though it's moving, or a person is holding it, is considered to be munach biyadav. The same thing is true over here, that in the event that the Tumah is moving, that does not make it floating, because it's considered to be on the ground, because somebody's holding it on the ground, or it's literally in touching the ground. So in that case, if it's Rishus HaYachid, the Suffolk would be Tumah. Why? We use even the same language that we use for Shabbat in defining the Rishus, right? It's as if they are Munach, they're resting in that Rishus. But if it's flying through the air, so somebody threw it, again, same sugya that we had b'Shabbos, right? Hazorek, what's the halacha of Nizrakim? So if they were Nizrakim, and then the question is whether somebody came into contact with that Tumah as it flew over his cuckoo, I mean, as it flew over his head. So in that case, Sveikan would be Tahar. Now, the only time that this would not be true is if you're talking about a mace. Oh, so if over there you have a kizayit min hamet, which can be metame ba'ohel. Now remember that to be metame ba'ohel doesn't necessarily, there's two types of tumah ba'ohel. One tumah ba'ohel is that you're in the same, under the same covering. The other tumah ba'ohel is the laser beam effect of tumah that goes straight up and straight down where there's nothing that's mafsik. So if a kizayit min hamet, which is metame ba'ohel, flies over an object that can be makabel tumah, or a person that can be makabel tumah. So you might think that the din of tumat sofa applies also to the din of ohel, and the laser doesn't affect you as it's moving. That is simply not true. The halacha is nogea only, since it's learned out from sheretz, and sheretz is betambi b'maga, not b'ohel. So this new halacha of tumat sofa does not apply to a kizayit min hamet. And it makes no difference whether you walked over it or it walked over you, because in either case, you're interrupting that laser beam, right? So it doesn't matter whether you are flying or it is flying. Either way, the din of either the tumah is tsafa or the object of the tumah, meaning that which is going to become tameh, was flying. In either event, this has nothing to do with Ohel Zaruk, and please don't let it get you confused. Over here, we're talking about where the Tumah is Zaruk, or the Kabel of the Tumah is Zaruk. So in that case, there is no din whatsoever of the special rules of Tsofa, because since we're talking about Ohel, Tsofa is irrelevant. Fine. Behold, Avarna, this is true. On anything that is metame milamala kilamata, which includes even zav vizava. So even if the source is the type of tumah which can be transmitted without touching, so that would be metame mishkav umoshav or heseto shel zav. So in the case of here, we have a zav, a zava, a nida, a yoledet, all of those cases of the princess and the pea, or where it's on top of the person, those cases are considered to be the same as the tumas mace, because they're not coming along and being metame bemaga. They're being metame magically. And the only type of tumah we're talking about is maga, because that's what we learn from the dinim of sheretz. Okay. Now we have something that is very similar to a situation. Barnea is trying to illustrate what tumas zruka means, or tumat safa, in a bucket or in a kli, and he's trying to show us what that means. You know, this is a very primitive form of show and tell, which he really thinks that we need to help in understanding what floating tumah refers to. We understand that's very good, Tommy. Now, a series of questions that we had in Shabbos about what is considered to be Tzav and what is considered to be Munach. Remember, we had the question of movement relative to what? So here we have all of those questions. When we're going to consider something to be at rest, this is a question of relative rest. At rest relative to what? Let's imagine a case where a kezayit min hamet is in a kli, and the kli itself is floating. So now that means relative to the kli, it's true, and that would mean that I must tell you that the wording is very confusing here. Because of that, the Rosh has to change some of it, because it uses, when it says basar kli, what it means is not relative to the kli. It means, do we look at the fact that the kli is floating, or do we look at the fact that the mace is at rest because he is inside the kli? Okay, but it's the same idea. Just don't mistake it to mean basar kli would mean that we look at the kli as the relative to the kli. Now let's say, and here's where it gets confusing, and the Rosh has to change the girsa, because the Gemara originally actually took it to mean relative to the kli, not basar kli, that we look at it the way that the kli is. So because of that, the girsa got confused. And we had imtim tzulama, we don't go relative to the kli, which means that we do go according to the kli, because the kli is not at rest. So therefore, the Rosh takes out that word lav, because it doesn't make any sense if it means the way we said it. So if you're going to tell me that in the case where the mace is considered over there not as tzofa, why? Because we're going according to the not according to the kli would mean that it's not tzofa. So then, meita gabi sheretz mahu. What would be the case, if we look at it at rest relative to the kli? What about if it's not in a kli? What if it's floating, but it's floating on a dead sheretz? And the sheretz, vis-a-vis the sheretz, the mace is now at rest. So maybe we should look at it as being the equivalent of being in a kli. Why? Well, because, look, I mean, it's totally different dinim of tumah. The tumah by the sheretz is only tumas erev. And the tumah by the mace is tumas shiva. And therefore, we can't look at it as just an extended tumah, can we? And so because of that, it would be the equivalent of having the tumah in a kli. And therefore, we should say that we do not go bus of the kli if we have that girsa, meaning that we don't look at it as being relative to the kli, and therefore we should consider it as if it would be the same din as over there, and the tumas mace is not floating. Or maybe we should say, but look, both items are tame, so we should look at it as one big floating piece of tuma, which consists of sheretz and mace. Now, let's say that in that case, we would say, look, since they're different, we view the sheretz as a container. Okay. So, imtim tzulamer kamanda machta tuma bikli damya. And therefore, we would say that it is not considered to be tuma tzafa, and it's considered to be a normal tuma, suffic tuma brishus hayochid, and it would be tame vadai. What would be the din? Forget about a mate. What would be the din of sheretz on top of a nevela? And the nevela is floating. Now, over here, both of them are tumas erev, right? All you need to do is you touch them, go to the mikveh, and you become tahor that evening. So do we say, kivan de tarvayo tumat erev yinon? Since both of them are only going to be matame as the same level of tuma, we should view them as being one thick piece of tuma, tuma smichta damya, and therefore we are talking about floating tuma, and floating tuma is not going to be matame b'maga. Or do we say, since they have different shiurim, and the din is that an avela is only metami with a kezayit? Whereas remember that when it comes to a sheretz, you can be metami even beka'adasha. We learned that out from the chomet, remember? That it's chilas briyasa is ka'adasha. So let's consider them as two different pieces. But the truth is, I'm not convinced 100% that just because it's different, and that's the only issue, is the different din. What if they're different pieces? Maybe that's enough to make them, one of them a container for the other. Suppose you just have a sheretz agabe sheretz, you know? So sheretz agabe sheretz mahu. Do we say, well, I mean, over here for sure it should be all one piece of floating tumah because they all have the same din. They all are the same thing. So hani vadai chachiyurininu, and therefore they're certainly floating. Oh, Dilma, or do we say, look, but these are two separate entities, so maybe the very fact that they're two separate entities, meaning that means that the lower entity is floating and the upper entity is at rest relative to the lower entity. So maybe even that's enough. Given the mafsik imeadade, they're not. Now, suppose you're going to tell me that in that case, they're considered to be two separate entities. Imtim tzulam b'sheretz, agabe sheretz, kiva de mafsik ime hadade. The upper sheretz is basically at rest vis-a-vis the lower sheretz, and it's only the lower sheretz that is floating, right? Okay. So then what would be the din of a sheretz, which is on top of a nevela that has so become mushy that it's been lying around for too long, and now it's more like a gel. So if it was nimuach, what would be the din over here? Do we say that since it's nimuach, it takes on the shape of its container, if it would be totally in a container, and therefore we view it as a liquid? If it's a liquid, then we can't view it as a container between the sheretz that's on top of it and the water that's beneath it, because we see it as being basically water itself. Or do we say, but listen, this is not really liquid. It's actually solid that exhibits elements of the liquid because it's gelled, right? So in that case, we would say that it's considered to be a solid, and therefore it's now relative to it, the sheretz is at rest, and therefore would not be considered to be tuma safa. Now, what do we consider to be a solid in terms of being oichlin? Suppose that we have a sheretz that's floating on top of semen. Now, we could view that shikvat zera as food, because since it's ejaculated, and it comes from directly from, it's not like urine where it's held together in an area where you could separate the urine from the rest of the body. So that's just a body fluid. It's actually ejected directly from the area that it's manufactured in. And that's more like a body product. So it's more like a food. So if we view it as a food, so then we could say that it's more like a mechitza, a chatzitza in this case. So what do we say about sheretz agabe shikvat zera? Ma'u. Imtim tzoloma. Perhaps we could say that kivan demit akra, since it's ejaculated, so it becomes like an ochel, because, and that makes it separate from, very different than the liquid, than the water that it's floating on. And therefore, the sheretz would be considered to be at rest on the semen. And furthermore, what would be the din of water that is thick because it has mechatas in it? Obviously, we could ask the same question, as Tosis points out, water that's thick because it has a lot of dirt in it, so it's muddy. So it's thicker water. Does that make it more like a solid? But we wanted to make the question more interesting by turning it into paraduma ashes. Why? Because the paraduma ashes make the water itself a source of tuma, right? Because it's betame esatorim. So because of that, we get involved in a double issue. So how do we look at that? I don't know, man. You've got me stumped. Lo yadin anteku. Let's leave it all not up in the air, but possibly floating in the water. Now, getting back to our favorite sugya of Tumata Tahom, Omer of Anuna. Suppose a Nazir and an Orsa Pesach walked into a, no, not the case again. Here it means either a Nazir or an Orsa Pesach. Now, they did their thing. In other words, we're talking about a classic case of Tumata Tahom, where you found out about it when it was already finished. They already brought the Korban Pesach. The Nazir already brought his Korbanos Tayir. That's the only case where we deal with Tumas HaTohom, right? But one of the variables was messed up. And that was that we found out that the Tumas HaTahon that he was exposed to was on the seventh day of his Tahira. So now that means that he had a Cheskas Tumah, correct? But we said, Tumas HaTahon never works if you have a Cheskas Tumah. It only works if, A, you finished up what you needed to do. Okay, that we did. And B, nobody knows about it. Okay, nobody knew about it. And C, that when you were exposed, you were in a Cheskas Tahor. But over here, says Rav Hamnuna, even if you weren't totally in a Cheskas Tahira, because you were exposed on the seventh day of your Tahira, that's still good enough. Tahorim. Why? Because the Lo'alima Tumat HaTahom Lemistar. Tumat HaTahom is not strong enough to remember the word mistar in these circumstances means to be seiser your karbonas. It cannot be powerful enough to cancel out the Korban Pesach that you brought and to cancel out the karbonas of the Naziris that you brought. Now, what in the world does that mean? It's not powerful enough. That is very weird. So again, the language is one of these mysterious languages. And again, we'll see how beautifully it fits in to the specific approach that we took to Tumat HaTahom. And that was Nogea, the Raglayim Ladover issue. So you remember, Raglayim Ladover didn't make any sense in terms of the Dinim of Chazaka. We understood Raglayim Ladover to be a function of the concept of Mechuvar Alav. The more that the person is sensitive to the Tumah, the more the Tumas HaTahom is not called Tahom. That's the point. So what it's saying is over here that the Tumat HaTahom is not enough present on the seventh day to be viewed as less than the equivalent of a full Tumah the way it normally would be if someone was a Cheskas Tumah. Now, he did not explain himself, meaning he didn't say at what point in the seventh day this person had been exposed to the Tumas HaTahom. Had he gone to the mikvah already? Had he already brought done his giluach, which is what you do on the seventh day if you're an Nazir Tomei? I mean, I don't know. He just said on the seventh day. It was mashma, even if he hadn't gone to the mikvah, certainly he hadn't done the giluach. Because of that, Rava asks on Rav Hamnuna from the Mishnah, because it's quite clear in the Mishnah that a Cheskas Tumah, in the case where the guy was going down to the mikveh to become Torah, that was the case in the Mishnah, Yorad Litpol, so it's obviously his seventh day, right? And he's going down to be Tovel in that mikveh, and it says Beferish, that since he had a Cheskas Tumah, the Tumas HaTahom is enough to be Soser. So what in the world are you saying, Rav Hamnuna asks Rava. So Mosi Rava, I don't get you. You didn't read the Mishnah? Yoradli Tayermi Tumata Mate Tame Shekheskat Tame Tame and Cheskat Tahor Tahor. And you're telling me that a guy on his seventh day who's going to the mikvah and is exposed to Tumata Tahom is considered to be Tahor? It's against the Mishnah. Says Rav Hamnuna, you didn't understand me. Obviously I don't mean the case where it's his seventh day and he hasn't gone to the mikvah yet. I mean that he had gone to the mikveh, and he had done his tiglachat, and then he discovers a week later, after everything was finished and he'd already brought his karbonas, then he discovers that at that time, when he had done his tiglachat, that day, before the end of the day, he had become exposed to Tumat HaTahom. That's the case. Oh, says Rava, oh, if that's the case, then I'm Moda to you. And I'll tell you something. I'm Moda. First, let me see that inside. Omar Leiso, Revun Menuna said to Rava, of course, if the Nazir, as a matter of fact, I'll take even one step further than you, my dear friend. You talked about he's going to be Tayval. I'll take it one step further. Even in a case where he was Tayval, but he had not yet done his Tiglachat Tumah, I would still agree with you that, of course, the Tumat HaTahom is enough. Why? Because this guy is still super sensitive to the question of his Tumah. This is the way we're understanding it, idiosyncrically. But that it's the question of Alima. So it's still very important in his eyes to remain aware of whether he's completed what he has to do Well, one of the things that he has to do today, besides going to the mikveh, is he has to do a tiglachat. So I take it even a step further than you. And Rava says back to him, well, I'll take it even a step lower than you, okay? I'll agree with you. In the case of the Oseh Pesach, there's no tiglachat. So even if he just went to the mikveh, I would agree with you. Once he went to the mikveh, that even though you'd say, but he's not finished with his tumah until sunset, right? No, I would agree with you, same thing. Seventh day, that's enough. So we're basically in total agreement. So af ani modeh lecha ba'oseh Pesach, because the point over here is not the level of Torah. See, here's again another raya to our special way of understanding the tumas at home. The reason that I'm modeh is because the lo mechusar v'lo klum. There's nothing else that this guy has to worry about. There's nothing else for him to do. So once there's nothing else for him to do, he now loses his concern about the possibility that there's some dead body under the area that he's... Well, it's ridiculous. Who thinks in those terms? That's the pshat, that there's no raglayim ledover anymore because he's already finished his concerns. So lo mechusar v'lo klum. Says Abaye, what do you mean lo mechusar v'lo klum? It's still the seventh day. The sun hasn't set. He's mamish at full yom, and you're calling him not cheskas tumah? What is that supposed to mean? Said Rava, because somehow or other, there are people who believe that the sun rises and sets on them. But after they grow up, they realize that the sun sets even if they don't do anything about it. Can you imagine? And even if they had somehow disappeared, the sun would have set anyway and will rise the next morning, even if they're gone and finished. How do you like that? So therefore, it's not nogea, because the sun setting is not his business. That's going to happen on its own. And so shimsha memela arva. So again, the issue is over here, not the technicality of the cheskas tumah, because it's still not mu'ur of shemesh. You see how beautifully it's brought out in the sugya? It's the question of whether there's anything left for me to worry about. Once I'm at this stage, I don't need to worry about the sun setting. It always is managed until now. It'll probably do okay today too. That's the point. And in the end, you should know that I can show you that Abaye ends up agreeing that that's true. And that a case where something is nogea mu'ur of shemesh, that's not considered to be something that is going to affect the issue of his tumah v'tahira in terms of the chazaka. And I'll prove it to you. Now, before we learn this sugya, in order for it to be completely painless, and therefore not only painless, but a joy, we just need to review a few basic ideas before we get into it. So remember, the din is that if a woman has a female child, that then for 14 days she is tumeah, tumas leida, the next 66 days she is tahora, if she went to the mikvah, obviously, even if she is bleeding, that's called tumei tohar, and then at the end of 66 and 14, which is 80, at the 81st day, she then brings her karbonis. During the entire period between the time she went to the mikveh at the end of 14 days and the end of the Demei Tohar at 80 days, she is considered to be a tfulat yom aroch, because the sun doesn't set on the tefillah of the 14th day until the 80th day. And at the end of the 80th day, now the next morning, the 81st day, she is able to bring her karbonis, and now she'll be able to eat kachin. And she'll be able to eat truma. Till now, she was only allowed to eat maizer. She wasn't allowed to remove a kachi. Okay. Those are the salient facts. Now, we've had before the issue of what happens when a person becomes tamei again with the same tuma that was going to be covered with a carbon for the tuma. Now, we had this question, remember, about a nazir tamei who becomes tamei again. Does he have to redo the whole thing? Well, it depends. If he had already gotten to the point where he was able to bring his karbonas, and he was chayiv in his karbonas, then he's considered to now be in a new state. And if he becomes tamei, so then he's going to have to bring a second state of karbonas. If, however, the tuma occurred before he was shayach to bring karbonas, so then the end karbon covers the whole deal. Now, in the case of a female birth, because you have 66 days of Tahira, you can get into a difficult situation. And that is that this woman can be impregnated after those 14 days. And then there will be enough time for the fetal development of 40 days that is still within the 80 days, right? If it was a male, this wouldn't be possible, because then the total period available till she brings her carbonus is only 40 days. But the first 7 of those days, she wouldn't be able to be impregnated. So there wouldn't be no gea. But in this case, where she had a female, now she could actually become pregnant during those 66 days and have a miscarriage. So suppose that she has a miscarriage. Once the miscarriage is 40 days of fetal development, it will be metame her again. Does she have to bring 2 sets of korbanot leidah? No. Why? Because it's all within the period of the original birth. Now, where it gets interesting is where the miscarriage was also female. If the miscarriage was female, then we start counting again the 80 days from this female. And now, suppose again she got pregnant, and again she had a child. Now, it doesn't matter what she has the next time. The question is that by the time the second miscarriage occurs, she is now way past the 80-day limit for the original full-term birth of her daughter, right? But she's still within the 80 days of the miscarried female. So now what's the din? Is the case clear to all? Even the ones who are hiding behind their big... Even those who are hiding behind their N's and their G's and their K's and their E's. Oh, my gosh. I mean, my friend, six, you can't even know whether you're talking about a climbing or a foreman with a K. I don't know how a foreman becomes a K, but all right. Maybe it's just to show that he's kosher. You know what kind of animal does that, that keeps showing that it's kosher. Huh. So, but in, but well, we got to begin with a glass of schnapps heading out to the car. Okay. So now the question is, does the end carbon at the end of all of these miscarriages, 2 miscarriages, 3 miscarriages, whatever it'll be, as long as they're each one within the period of a malot, even if they're not in the period of the original malot, meaning of the full birth, they're way past the 80 days. So what would be the din over there? And it's only through examining this case, which has nothing to do with anything that we're talking about. And even when we get to the end of the case, we'll see it has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. We will then figure out how we can see that Abaya ended up agreeing with Rava about Harav Shemesh. So have patience. Okay, so here's the deal. We can prove that Abaya had Harata. Af Abaya Harabe. Because, look, let's first start off with the case which gave birth to this whole discussion. Yom melot tavi, toch melot lo tavi. So if a woman miscarries on the day, we use the word melot, because the Torah uses the word melot. Uvim lot yemei tahora, laben olabat, right? So suppose she has a miscarriage on the day of the melot, which can only happen if there was sufficient time for 40 days of fetal development, and therefore it would only be in the case where she has another child after giving birth to a daughter. Can't happen if he gives birth to a son. So yom melot tavi, toch melot lo tavi. She cannot bring 2 karbanos. She only has to bring 1 karban if the second the second birth, which was obviously a miscarriage, was only after 40-some days, if that's still within the 80 days of the original delivery. Now, you might think that yochalot tavi aleidah shelifnei melot, aval tavi aleidah shelachar melot. Didn't you just say that that's true? Yeah, but I'm talking about a case where there was a second miscarriage within the melot of the first miscarriage, but it's achar melot of the first birth. So you might think that we should go according to the yom melot of the first birth. That's what you might think. And therefore, take out those words which make absolutely no sense. They're completely wrong. V'tipater mishtehem, because it means the opposite. It means that she won't be tipater mishtehem. Talmud lomar uvim lot yemei tahara Look, that's why the Torah says it's all a function of Tahira. Has she become Tahar yet? No, because she miscarried in the middle of her first Yemei Tahara. And then she miscarried again in the middle of her second Yemei Tahara. So the bottom line is, either you've got a Yom Malot, the Yom Malot Tavi, Toch Malot, Lo Tavi. So far, nothing to do with our sugya, right? Now, Rav Kahana just wanted you to understand that, look, I mean, don't misunderstand this. We're not trying to bring a raya that there's a second Yom Malot versus a first Yom Malot, and somehow the Pasuk is Marba, a new Yom Malot. That's not what this is all about. Shiny Hocha, the point is that in determining whether you bring a second Karban, you have to determine first whether there was ever a day that she could have brought a Karban. And since over here there never was a day that she could have brought a Karban, if she becomes Tameh after that, only then would she bring a Karban. But over here, there was never a day that she could have brought a Karban. So I don't care how many miscarriages she has. The bottom line is, there's only the first time that she could bring a Karban is after these series of unfortunate events, right? Okay. That's why it makes sense. Now, here's where it has to do with Abaye. Says the Gemara, but wait. Hasam nami michasra harev shemesh. I don't understand what you're talking about. I mean, why is it not considered to be before the Malot if she hasn't yet gotten to Harev Shemesh? Now, this is a ridiculous question, which I'll explain in a moment. But just to first reach the end of the sugya. Omer Abaye, and here Abaye echoes exactly the words that Rava says. That doesn't matter because sons set on their own. And therefore, daughters born then would also be included before the sun sets. Now, that's sufficiently confusing for Barnea, hopefully. Certainly kept him quiet. Ha! Now, the question is that those words make no sense. Hasam nami mechuseret erev shemesh. She's not mechuseret erev shemesh. Because remember, the sun sets at the end of the 80th day. And that's the time that she becomes royal of Karban. So what are you saying, Rivkana? Excuse me. Who? What? Where? What? I mean, the Gemara asking Rivkana, what Harav Shemesh? Where Harav Shemesh? At the end of the 80th day, now she has to bring a new Karban because it was the end of Harav Shemesh. So the Rush explains that the Gemara is taking for granted a much more complex point, namely that because of the fact that you did not make any difference between when it is that she went to the mikveh, right? We're talking about any case. So let's say that she never ended up going to the mikveh after the 14 days that gave her Yemei Tahara. She says, hey man, I got pregnant too fast and I'm not going through this again. I ain't going to no mikveh and you boys stay away, right? Okay. So then when is she going to go to the mikveh? She's only going to go to the mikveh after she finishes the whole process. So in that case, let's say she didn't go to the mikveh till the next morning because she wanted to bring her karbanos to be able to eat kachim. But that would mean that she only went to the mikveh on the 81st day. And you're saying that if she had a baby, that then it would be not covered by the karban that she's going to be bringing. But why not? Isn't she still considered to be within the range of the malot of her latest miscarriage because there was no Harav Shemesh? That's the question. To which Abaye said, that's not a point. It doesn't matter whether she happens to be a Tevulas Yom. She did whatever she could do, and the sun sets on its own. And therefore, in terms of defining when the Yom Malot is, the Yom Malot was the day that could have been the end of it all. And as long as she's finished whatever she needed to do, that's the Yom Malot. So you see that Abaye basically subscribes to the same basic idea that we need to distinguish between Harav Shemesh and other steps that make you tar. Now, obviously, it's not literally the same as our case where the function of the Harav Shemesh and the awareness is totally different than over here where it's Nogea Havas Karbanaisa. But you see that Abaye, in general, utilizes the same understanding of a fundamental difference between a process that occurs on its own and something that has to be done in order to become Roy Fakhrovas Karvan. Okay, a lot of amazing new ideas, clarification of the concept of Tumat Sofa, the difference between a Tumat Sofa that's Nogea, specifically Maga, as opposed to the types of Tumah that don't require contact, such as Metame Mishkav U'Moshav, and definitely such as Tumas Ohel. Also, the Din that Tumat Sofa is just as applicable to the floating Tumah as it is to the floating object that became Tameh. It doesn't matter. The point is that the interaction between the two cannot be through Tsofa. And then we had relative Tsofas that we were talking about. What do we mean by Tsofa? How much is considered to be Munach? Similar to the questions that we asked for Gabi Brishas HaYochid, Brishas HaRabim on Shabbos. And then we got into the question of what is considered to be the Cheskas Tuma that does not allow Tumat HaTahom to actually be a valid concept because the person is still involved in his Tuma. The Chiddush, that things that are not his business to make happen, are not included in the Cheskas Tuma. Tremendous Chiddush, which all points to this idea of Delo Yoda, but it's a function of knowing about it, someone's knowing about it, the part of it's being part of the information in the world that concerns people. Amazing, amazing concepts, and that now brings us up to this next sugya that will start Bezrat Hashem tomorrow, which is also a continuation of some of the Raglayim Ladover elements that were mentioned earlier. Okay, Rabotzai, that was so much fun, and I hope I'm not the only one having fun. So I thank you so much for being there and for learning with me, and look forward, with the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to being able to do this yet again tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. Kol Tov, have a wonderful day. Surot Tovot, and the end of insanity and chaos.
Insanity.
Kol Tov, everyone.